With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Five Times Podcast. To see a legend near you, check out the events page on our website, fivetimes.co.uk.
Darvish fighting Rush, and now Mark Lawrenson. Missed him once more, and the header goes down, and it goes in from Steve Nicol, and that makes it three. Well, you have to say, if anybody today deserves a goal, Steve Nicol, for his work down the left-hand side, particularly in the first half, does. And now, as he moved into a central position, he's there to finish off. The cross from Mark Lawrenson, wide of Southall, 3-0.
Steve Nicol, thank you for taking part in this chat. It's great to see you back in Liverpool. What's it like being back? Back amongst your friends again? Does it seem like you've never been away?
In some ways, yeah, but seeing the city, I barely recognise it. It's changed so much.
In terms of the book, why now? Why have you decided that this is the right time to bring one out?
I think basically the job I do now as an analyst at ESPN, my mindset's changed. Certainly being at Liverpool, it was all about in-house, keep everything close to your chest, say nothing, and I've pretty much carried that throughout my career, playing wise, and then coaching. I was of the same mind, you know, keep everything quiet, keep it in-house, tell, in Kenny's words, don't tell MD anything. But now doing the job I do as an analyst, as I said, it's a complete U-turn. It's the opposite. It's being open and basically telling people what your thoughts are. And that's that kind of kicked in with the book. You know, for years I said I wasn't going to do a book. You know, I'm quite happy knowing what I know and not interested if anybody else is interested. But just the change of job and it just made me think. And I thought, why not? And actually, I'm now glad I did. Because you always forget a lot of stuff that you've done, both serious and funny. So it's actually been quite enjoyable, and it's great to see it finally done, and I think it looks good.
Since we found out the book was coming out, I see quite a lot of the ex-players, and the first thing I've said to them all, one of the first things is, Steve Nicol's got a book out, and the first thing they do is laugh. And they say, brilliant, I can't wait to read it. I mean, you were one of those characters that nobody's got a bad word to say about. In fact, quite the, you know, the testimonials are ringing out. What a great lad he was. What a great player is the next thing that they say as well.
Well, that's always a nice thing to hear. I guess you kind of, you do what you do. Everybody is the way they are. And, you know, people think that about you, particularly your teammates, then that's fantastic.
Alan Hansen did the foreword for you. Why did you... Did you pick him? Was that a decision that somebody else made, or what?
No, I just thought it was he was the right man. You know, he was the guy that incessantly wound me up, but he's also the guy that helped me an incredible amount as well, both on and off the field, along with a lot of others. But you know, Big Al is somebody who I respect big time, and you know, if he was willing to do it, which he was, then. It didn't really matter what he said. I'd be happy with it.
Well, what he did say was, and I hope I'm not giving the game away too much here, but he says, I don't think in 10 years we were together there was one person who said a bad word about Steve Nicol. He was one of the best players that ever pulled on the red jersey of Liverpool Football Club.
I tell you, that sounds good to me. I mean, I don't know what to tell you, but when somebody like him says that, man, that's obviously a great honour.
A couple of things that stick in the mind. Obviously, people look at the title and people who... remember Steve Nicol and the stories that were told about you. Always knew that you had a bit of a liking for crisps, and also the big feet as well. That was a big theme in there as well. Talk about the crisps first of all. Is that something that went back to your childhood?
Yeah, well, I just always liked a bag of crisps, and on occasions I would take it an extra half mile as I would with a couple of pints. So, you know, I think the title was really good because I think when you see it, two things come to mind. It's five league titles, which tells you it's about football. But then and a bag of crisps tells you that there's another side as well. And so it's good. I think people enjoy it. you know, people always look at football players, I think, particularly today, and it's all about them, and it's not the team, and we were so different. It was always about the team, but we also had a laugh as well, including all the wind-ups. So I think the title tells it all. Five league titles and a bag of crisps tells you that there's two things going on.
Tell people that don't know how big your feet are, because you even had parents writing to you in the early days when you become a footballer saying, where'd you get these boots from? What advice would you give? Because my kids got size 11, 12 feet themselves.
Yeah, that was, well, the rest of the players were getting fan mail and I was getting irate mothers and fathers trying to figure out where they could buy size 12, 13s, 14s and then 15s for the kids. My feet are size 12 and I think that was pretty normal to me.
You couldn't give those boots away though. Normally the pros give the boots to the apprentices, but no one had the same size feet as you, I don't think, apart from the goalie.
I was just about to say, apart from the goalie, that's, again, back in the day the boots had to be broken in, and fortunately or unfortunately for Big Billy, he had to break mine in.
You also, in those very early days, I mean, it was in the days of semi-professional football when you first made the breakthrough in Scotland, but you tried your hands at all kinds of things, didn't you, from working washing walls in factories, apprentice electrician.
Yeah.
I don't think you fancied any of those jobs though, did you?
No, I was an apprentice, a brickies apprentice, as a labourer, including that one, and including the ones you mentioned. I was the worst at the lot, because I wasn't interested. In my head, I was going to be playing football professionally, or certainly full time. I was part time at Ayr. So I wasn't interested. I'm sure that contributed to me being a little bit on the lazy side when it came to those sort of duties.
You enjoyed a pint fairly early as well. There's quite a lot of stories in there about great nights out, but you talk quite a lot about the South Beach Hotel when you were back in Scotland and sneaking in there. And in those very early days of the football career, I think there was a couple of problems where maybe one of your mates intervened and said, you're going to have to start looking at this a bit more professionally if you want to make a career for yourself out of this.
Yeah, that's true. A friend of mine actually called Ayr United and said I was overdoing it a little bit, which was correct. But when you're that young, you can get away with it, and I was getting away with it. But the fact that I was brought in and told that was happening was an important thing that happened to me at that time in my life, because I cut it back big time. And of course 8 months later, after cutting it back, I ended up moving to Liverpool. So, you know, had I not done that, I may still have been a professional player, certainly not with a huge club like Liverpool though.
I love the story about Jeff Twentyman, because they did things a different way then, Liverpool, didn't they? And directors' boxes would be full of scouts and coaches watching players, but you know, he went about his business a completely different way to most scouts, didn't he?
Yeah, well, obviously I met Jeff after I moved to Liverpool and spoke to him about, you know, how he was scouting me, and that's exactly correct. You know, he was a guy that stood in the terraces. You know, every time he came to watch me, he would stand in a different spot. He'd be asking all the punters around him what they thought of me, and of course none of them knew, because he was, you know, he was just another guy watching Ayr United to them. So he really got to know me inside out, not just on the field, but, you know, what kind of person I was as well, which, again, back then was important to clubs like Liverpool. You know, if you were a superstar player, but you were less than a nice person, and it did make a difference back then, you know, they probably wouldn't have signed you. Today that doesn't happen. I guess it seems like a player's attitude and a player's demeanour doesn't count now. It's all about money, they don't care, so you kind of had to be the whole package back then. And as I said, Jeff fortunately thought I was, and his recommendations got me to Liverpool.
Were you ripe as a victim walking into that dressing room for the first time? Because people often say about that Liverpool dressing room, it's a school for hard knocks, and there were some big personalities ready to knock you down.
I think ripe is exactly the answer. I mean, I must have been Hansen's dream walking in the door for somebody who's gullible, green behind the ears, and just ready to get wound up mercilessly. And that's exactly what happened.
In terms of your impact there, I mean, it wasn't long after winning the European Cup that all of a sudden you're in the first team. Did you expect that the progression from the player that you were in Scotland into the first team at Liverpool was going to be quite as quick? Was it slower than you anticipated? What was it?
Well, I knew the history at the time at Liverpool was buying players from lower league clubs to not be too harsh on other teams.
Yeah.
And so I knew that I was going to go there and I was going to have to learn the Liverpool way. And I'm going into a team that at the time were European champions. So, you know, I might have been daft, but I wasn't that daft that I thought I was just going to start playing straight away. I knew how it worked. I knew the system. I knew I was going to have to serve my apprenticeship. And for once, an apprenticeship, I worked really, really hard as opposed to the other ones. And it got me in the first team.
You were travelling to training in those days on a moped, a 50cc moped that belonged to your wife, I think. I don't think many Liverpool players got away with that, did they? Did you? Did you get away with it?
Well, I did actually travel when I was at Air United. My girlfriend, Eleanor, at the time, before she became my wife, had a 50cc moped. I couldn't drive, so it just seemed the natural thing to do, to jump on the bike and get myself to training. We brought it with us when we came to Liverpool. The first house I ever bought was in Crocky Park. And probably a few of the residents there saw me scooting around to the shops now and again, but I didn't drive into training with it. I wasn't that daft.
First car, who did you buy that off?
Unfortunately, I bought it off a gentleman called Mr. Alan Hansen, who I never noticed at the time was wearing a black and white striped jersey and a mask. So I should have noticed there was a problem. So he sold me a dud, basically.
Was there a point at which in those early days, you talk extensively about Rome 84 and about missing a penalty, it's something that stayed with you for a long time, almost to the end of your playing days. You never really got rid of that. But was there a moment at which you thought it clicked and I feel comfortable now, I feel comfortable as a Liverpool player, I feel as though I can do this now going forward?
As far as going to Liverpool, right from the very start, I felt at home. I was certainly a long way from ready to play in the first team, but just from a personal point of view, I felt as though I was in a place where I belonged. As far as belonging in the team, that kind of happens before you think about it.
Mm.
You know, you're always striving to get there. And for most of my time at Liverpool, and I don't think I'm alone in this, even though you'd played for a while, even though you maybe had a couple of seasons behind you, every time the team sheet was read out, you were still listening to make sure that you were in it.
Mm.
So, you know, you never quite thought you were cemented in, which I guess is a good thing.
Aside from the fact that you clearly were a great footballer and one of the all-time greats at Liverpool, really, but the other big theme I think comes across in the book is to how close you were to all of your different managers at that point. You had a huge affection for Joe Fagan from those very early stages. Wins the treble in his first season, and he had a huge impact on you, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Joe was typical of the way Liverpool was then. You know, it was a case of when any of the coaching staff spoke to you, then you listened.
Mm.
Because nobody wasted time BSing, for want of a better word. There wasn't any of that going on. Liverpool was very straight to the point, very, very direct. And you always knew where you stood.
Mm.
And Joe, for me at the time, I wasn't comfortable going straight to Bob Paisley, so Joe would be the guy I would go to and say, you know, what's Bob looking for? You know, what does he want me to do?
Mm.
So, Joe was a great manager, a great person, and again, somebody who was instrumental in teaching me the Liverpool way.
Two other themes that I was really interested in. I mean, you were in that kind of world clique, weren't you? You drank with certain players and stuff like that. Bruce Grobler was a big pal of yours as well. You talk in there about a story which you would play snooker, you would feel that you were unbeatable after 10 pints. There's one quote in there about that. You know, you were good at snooker, but once you'd had 5 or 10 pints, you were basically unbeatable.
Well, it was actually pool.
Was it?
But yeah, between 5 and 10, I was invincible. I was Jimmy White of the pool world. Unfortunately, before that and after that, things kind of fell apart a wee bit.
Mm.
But we had probably half a dozen of us staying over in that part of the world. And obviously, you know, you say click, but, you know, the one thing Liverpool never ever was a click.
Mm.
Did that half a dozen meet up regularly? Yes, we did.
Yeah.
But we also met up with the other so-called click in Southport on a regular basis as well.
It must have been great to be in that environment, though, Steve. I mean, you were all great characters, all great footballers. You all had this great confidence in each other, but you also had each other's backs at whatever era you were part of. You were so tight together, weren't you?
Yeah, and I think that's the key, both on and off the field, is that no matter what it was, because we all make mistakes, we all do things that we'd rather change, but at the end of the day, when you've always got somebody behind you to help you out, and when I say somebody, I'm talking about a whole group of people. Mm. I mean, it's a fantastic situation to be in and involved in, and I think it showed on the field. You know, we always talk about all the great games and all the great results, but you know, don't kid yourself. There were times when we all struggled, but to know that everybody was behind you and was doing their bit for you was always a great feeling.
I know the atmosphere's changed a little bit now in Liverpool. You go to a Merseyside derby, it's an awful lot more poisonous than it was when you were back playing. You were, as two teams ruling the world, weren't you, Liverpool and Everton? But you shared some titanic battles, league titles that went right down to the wire as well. You were actually quite good friends, weren't you, the two sets of players?
Well, we were. I think the word is respect. You know, the side they had, you know, we Reedy, and obviously Sheedy went over there from us. You know, Sharpie, Neville. I mean, just everybody respected, as professionals respected how good each side was. And it was great that you could stand and kick lumps of each other during the game, but know that when the game was over, then that was over as well. And win, lose or draw, we'd always have a pint together, and that respect would always be there.
That story about you sharing a flight back wouldn't pass any conversation now, would it? This is talking about when Liverpool win the W in the FA Cup, someone has an idea that both teams should fly back together. I mean, that flight must have been uncomfortable, even as winners of the trophy.
Yeah, I mean, I can assure you, I can only speak for myself, but I felt for the Everton guys that were on our flight. There was two flights, both teams were mixed up. The idea behind it's a great idea, but the reality is that for the losing team, it's just an absolute nightmare. And I definitely felt for the Everton guys, you know, going around the city, both teams on open top buses, you know, we're up the front showing off the two trophies, the league and the cup, and you know, unfortunately for them, they were behind. I mean, I can't imagine how bad they must have felt.
Even probably a bigger story is the fact that you offer Derek Manfield a lift home back to the world afterwards, and he accepts.
Well, we did, yeah. Derek used to live down the road from me, and he came home with Bruce and I and the wives. His wife wasn't there because she was pregnant at the time and couldn't travel, but again, it wasn't a comfortable ride home, even in the...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Car, because I can only imagine how bad Derek felt. He just wanted to get himself home and shut the front door.
One of the big things that strikes you about you look back to that brilliant era of Liverpool characters was the nicknames. You had so many of them, probably more nicknames than any Liverpool player of previous eras or since has had. What was your favourite?
My favourite? I don't really have a favourite. I've certainly had a lot. There'd be a few obscure ones that nobody would understand. Hanno Nicolai would be one who nobody will understand other than Hanson that gave me it. Chico, Chops. Christ, there's so many, I can't remember them all.
You also listed Bumper, yeah.
Bumper.
Tell me about the Bumper one.
At the present time, I'm Bumper.
Yeah.
Because I meant to say Bouncer and said Bumper, and you make a mistake amongst that lot, it sticks.
That's it forever. Who was, of all the teammates, because in the book as well you go through an extensive list of all the former teammates who've got nicknames, who was your favourite nickname of your former players?
Again, I wouldn't say there's a favourite. I just think there's a load of great ones that nobody would actually get unless you actually told them what it was or who it was.
Aldo's is my favourite because people still call him that now. Players that never even played with him call him that.
Stonks. Yep.
What was that for?
No, I can't. Probably not.
This is
I'd
a
be
podcast,
better off
so
not
it,
telling you.
Yeah, it'll probably go out after 9 o'clock. Yeah.
Fraggle Rock. I'm sure a lot wouldn't know Fraggle Rock. Smithy. Smodger. Vitch.
That was Ronnie Whelan, wasn't it, Vitch?
That was Ronnie Whelan, yeah. I mean, there's so many.
There's loads in the book, and it will be explained in there as well.
Yeah.
I'm anxious to pass you a pint at this point as well, because it's... I don't want to stop
I've
you
from...
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Just to paint the picture, we're sat in your hotel room, and a pint's just arrived. I don't want it to go warm.
It must be yours.
Talk to us then about... We talked about Joe Fagan. Kenny's era changed everything, didn't it? It might surprise people to know he was the manager that appointed a qualified physiotherapist for the first time.
I mean, I love Ronnie and Roy to bits, but getting smashed in the face with a wet sponge for no apparent reason is not high on my list. Being told to stick your foot in a wax bath is not high on my list either. So when that changed, that was a good move from Kenny.
What did change about the atmosphere then? The boot room, it was a continuation, wasn't it, when Kenny took over in many ways, but was there a change in atmosphere or approach to the way he took the job on as a player-manager? Because he was a big character behind the scenes, wasn't he?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it changed an awful lot. As far as the way we went about things and as far as the attitude and what we had to do and the set-up, it was pretty much seamless. It was a lot of the same. Probably over the course of 18 months after he took over, we probably the only thing that would change would be the way we went about winning games. It was more about doing things quicker and getting things forward quicker, because up until then it had been a real possession based slowish build up to make sure you didn't lose the ball. There was a little bit more of a gamble, probably not, gamble's not the right word, but we certainly went forward a lot quicker than we had done previously under other managers.
Also a great story in there about the Anfield rap. Great friends get together, have a little bit of a sing-song, a few pints consumed before, during.
Well, as always, it wasn't a bad move to get us tanked up before we started singing, because we weren't exactly the greatest singing team in the land.
It did well on the charts though, people forget that.
Number two in the charts, yeah. We got an absolute fortune. We made £100 sterling each. Cash in hand as well, by the way.
Of that era, again, we talked before about some of the players. Kenny probably isn't sometimes given credit for how he kind of evolved that team. It was Joe's team he took over. He brought in some brilliant players that just took Liverpool onto a next level.
Yeah. You know, obviously, first season winning the double. I mean, how do you keep that going? Obviously it's very difficult, and he didn't manage to, but you know, when questions were starting to be asked about him, you know, people said that, well, you won the double because it was Joe's team. Well, he soon put an end to that when he goes out and brings in, you know, Johnny Barnes and Peter and Aldo and Ray Houghton, which allied to a squad that was actually talented anyway, just raised the whole bar. And as I said, that squashed all those question marks over Kenny's management.
As a utility man, soon after you moved to centre back, there's a few injuries that force you into
that. I hate
that
name.
Utility man.
Absolutely.
It's got so many bad connotations, hasn't it?
Well, it does, aye. You know, in my eyes, that's kind of a jack of all trades, master of none. I certainly didn't feel that way.
I don't think anybody looked at it that way. You were master of all of them, I think.
Well, I would like to think so, but I don't like the word.
If there was one position that you would have picked to play in those, what was the one that you would always have put yourself in if you had the choice?
I mean, playing behind John Barnes at left back was a special thing to do and a special place to be. Not only are you playing with a great player, but I've got a front row seat to watch a guy at his best. But in all honesty, I really couldn't care less. If I was in the Liverpool team, that was the only thing that mattered.
Well, this is a fella who picks left back Alan Hansen says you're the best right back Liverpool ever had, better than Phil Neal, and you win football writers player of the year as a centre back.
Yeah, I'm not sure I like that sort of connotation. Phil Neal was somebody that I really looked up to, and if I could, as a young player, do half of what Phil did, I'd be a happy man. So, I mean, to be talked about in the same breath as the likes of Phil is absolutely huge.
Yeah.
But again, you know, just to play with some of the guys I did, both when I went there. And then of course that team in the late 80s, just a lucky man.
Can we talk about Hillsborough, because that's a process that you described in the book as being cathartic. You'd not really spoken about it before, putting your thoughts down on paper and trying to process why it had such a big effect on you, and still has a big effect on you now as well, all these years later.
Yeah, I mean, it's always tough to talk about, to be honest. There's never a time when it's not. But listen, the one thing I can say about Hillsborough is I think the way that the players and their wives and families handled it, helping whoever needed help, I think part of the reason that we managed to do such a good job, because I think we did a good job. We've certainly been told we did a good job of that. But that, again, is part of the process of Liverpool. You know, when you join Liverpool, you're taught that you have to face things, good or bad. You don't turn and run the other way. You have to face things head on and try and deal with it the best you can, and don't let it get the better of you. And that's what we did. I certainly feel that's what we did during that period, where we, you know, we had to counsel families and other supporters who just happened to be at the game, who were traumatised by it. So again, I can only speak for myself, but I'm sure the rest of the guys are as proud as I am of what we did, and we certainly take great pride in what we did. And in the end of it, it was actually an honour to be able to do that.
Kenny was a very big friend to you in that point as well, wasn't he? You speak in the book about a point at which you turned to Kenny for help. You were half expecting him to tell you to, you know, pull yourself together and get on with it, but it was a completely different reaction that the manager and your friend gave you.
I just think that kind of sums up what that whole period did to everybody. And actually, should we expect it to have affected us any other way? Probably not. You know, at the end of the day, we're football players. We're not counsellors. We're not anything other than professional players who want to go out and play football. So the fact that it did affect me, I know it affected Kenny, as we all know now. I guess it really shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody.
You speak about the song as well, about You'll Never Walk Alone. I know you're going to hear it for probably the first time in a live game for quite a while. I can tell it's going to be an emotional experience for you, but it's a song that resonates very strongly with you, with your wife, with your family.
Well, it was always something you stood in front of and listened to anyway. Before Hillsborough, it meant, I certainly thought at the time it meant everything, but after Hillsborough, I mean, it just means, is it possible that it's more than everything? I don't know. It's an incredible song anyway, but the history behind it, and obviously the history that Hillsborough gives it, I mean, it's just incredible.
You also go on to talk about the end for Kenny, and you know, it's a story that everybody knows very well now as well, but in the testing times, there was always sometimes a time when you had to, as Liverpool players, get on with it. The humour that came out of the dressing room was always a strong theme as well, and you're all gathered in the dressing room. Alan Hansen plays part in probably one of the best pranks that you talk about in the whole book. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it was one of the best pranks, but it was also maybe the only time where he didn't get me. He says he got me, but I can assure you, he didn't get me. He got me 9,999 times previously, but he didn't get me on this one. I wasn't 100% convinced. I mean, Liverpool at the time were one of the, if not the biggest club in the world, and he's got all the pros in a dressing room telling them that he's the manager. Everybody's swallowing what he's selling. or eating what he's selling, and he's telling them what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing. We're going to be coming in, we're going to be getting videos on Sunday morning. He's telling us where we can drink, where we can't drink. And then there's just silence. And then he just walks out. And everybody's mourning. And who does he think he is, telling me where I can go, what I can do, who I can't go with? And then 2 minutes later, he walks back in the dressing room, goes back to silence, and just says, "Lads, I'm just kidding." And walked out.
He was retiring instead.
He was retiring instead.
We're running out of time, so I'm anxious to talk about Graeme Souness, because your perception, your take on Graeme Souness's time at Liverpool is quite different to a lot of people's memories of it. Fans, players alike. You say it wasn't all Graeme Souness's fault. It wasn't the pace of the change. It was something to do with the fact that Liverpool were in a little bit of a decline as players as well.
Yeah, the focus after Hillsborough changed what happened at Liverpool as far as every single thing that went on at the club was geared towards what happened on a Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And rightly so, the focus changed to what was more important, which at the time was more important. Unfortunately for Graham, that meant that the players that were there were affected. Allied to the fact that, you know, some of us, or a lot of us, were getting older. And when that happens, there has to be change. So I don't care whether it was Graeme Souness or any other manager, they would have had a hard time coming into Liverpool and have to follow what had gone previously. The expectation of Liverpool is you have to win. You have to win the league, you have to win the FA Cup, you have to win every game you play. And to do that, you need to have a squad that is focused and actually has the ability to do that. I don't think Graham had that. And so the fact that he didn't have that meant, however good or however bad a manager he was, it's not going to happen. So, you know, he changed a lot of things. People said that he changed a lot of things too quickly. You know, what he changed, one thing, just as an example, would be the diet, which today everybody expects. You know, it's a given now. You have to watch your diet. But at the time, everybody was complaining. So you're telling me it's better to eat fish and chips straight after a game as opposed to something that's actually going to help you, which is what he was trying to do. So I think stuff like that vindicates what happened when Graham was there. And at the end of the day, you need players. Graham signed the players that at the time were thought to be the better players or the best players, and it didn't quite work out. You know, for years Liverpool replaced Ron Yates, they replaced the Saint, they replaced Keegan, they replaced Kenny, they replaced Rushy. You know, you can go all around the field. Liverpool for 35 years maybe replaced all those great players with players who were as good and sometimes better. That was going to come to an end eventually, and unfortunately for Graham, it came to an end for him.
There's brilliant stories in there about the passion that you still had to play. Howard Kendall signed you. You played for a couple of clubs that people won't have expected and probably don't even remember all these years later. I love the fact that you had that passion to play, and you talk about the fact you found a personal trainer at the age of 33 that prolonged your career as well. Just before we finish, though, talk about the American adventure as a manager, because that was something that changed your family's life as maybe opposed to yours. It was a great thing to try at that point of your career.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, the majority of players come to the end of the career, and I don't think there's a handful know exactly what's going to happen. Most of us don't. Most of us hope and think we're going to go into coaching. Oh, I'd love to manage. Just it's not that simple. You know, my phone wasn't ringing when I packed in at Sheffield Wednesday, and so I got a call saying there was an opportunity to go to America, still be able to play because the level that I was going to be at, I could still play, but also coach. And my wife and I sat down and, you know, thought we'd hate to be sitting in the house 20 years down the line thinking, why didn't we try that? Because you don't know. So we went for a year initially and thought, okay, if it doesn't work out, then the kids who were 12 and 14 at the time wouldn't have been adversely affected education-wise. And we're still there.
It's It's a great story. And your kids are grown up now, they've got family
there. Grown up, yeah. I've got two grandkids who are fully fledged Yankee Doodle Dandies. So, and I'm a fully fledged Yankee Doodle Dandy myself. Yeah. I'm now a dual citizen of both Great Britain and the USA.
Just before we finish, a very brief question. You're a hugely respected football pundit now. We get all the stuff that you do over here as well. People have got all kinds of weird and wonderful boxes they can access your stuff on now. But do you ever see yourself going back in as a manager, or do you think that's it now?
I would never have seen myself ending up in the United States. And so I never say no to anything. You just never know what's round the corner. Mm. So I love the job I'm doing now. I would love to do it for as long as I can. If something came along, then would I think about it? Yeah, it'd be silly not to, but I don't envisage it happening. But you never know.
Been brilliant catching up with you. One of my all-time favourite Liverpool players. It's been a huge honour to meet up with you and share some stories. Thanks for your time.
I didn't know you told lies as well.
Out on the road soon, Jamie Carragher, Ian Rush and friends, Robbie Fowler. Coming soon to a city near you, the Liverpool Legends. For more information and ticket prices, check out our website, fivetimes.co.uk.